This is Audible.
Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of Forever Peace by Joe Haldeman. Narrated by George Wilson.
To save credits and money, we went to the zoo snack machines for some bread and cheese. There was a covered area behind the place with picnic tables, new since the last time we'd been there. We got a table to ourselves in the afternoon heat. "So how much do we say to the gang?" I said, slicing cheddar in crumbling chunks with a plastic knife. I had my putty knife, but it would make a raclette out of the stuff. Or a bomb.
"About you or the project?"
"You haven't been there since I was in the hospital?" She shook her head. "Let's not bring it up. I meant, should we talk about Peter's findings, our findings?"
"No reason not to. It'll be common knowledge tomorrow."
I stacked an uneven pile of cheese on a slab of dark bread and passed it to her on a napkin. "Rather talk about that than me."
"People will know, Marty, for sure."
"I'll talk to Marty if I have a chance."
"I think maybe the end of the universe might upstage you anyhow."
"It does put things into perspective." The half-mile walk to the Saturday night special was hot and dusty, even with the sun setting. A chalky kind of dust. We were glad to step into the air conditioning. Marty and Belda were there, sharing a plate of appetizers.
"Julian, how are you?"
Marty said with careful neutrality.
"All right now. Talk about it later?"
He nodded. Belda said nothing, concentrating on dissecting a shrimp.
"Anything new on the project with Ray? The empathy thing?" "Quite a bit of new data, actually, though Ray is more up to date on it. That terrible thing with the children, Iberia?"
"Liberia," I said.
"Three of the people we were studying witnessed that. It was hard on them."
"Hard on everybody. The children, especially."
"Monsters," Belda said, looking up. "You know, I'm not political, and I'm not maternal either, but what could have been in their minds to think that something so terrible could help their cause?"
"It's not just a warrior mentality," Amelia said. "Doing that to your own people."
"Most of the Nagumi thinks we did it," Marty said, "and just manipulated things to make it look like they did. As you say, no one would do that to their own people. That's proof enough right there."
"You think it was all a cynical plan?" Amelia said. "I can't imagine."
"No, the word we have, this is confidential and unsupported, is that it was one lunatic officer and a few followers. They're all disposed of now, and Nagumi psychops, such as they are doing a lot of smoke and mirrors, proving that for some reason we would want to destroy a school full of innocent children to make a point, to show how ruthless the Nagumi are, when of course everyone knows they're the army of and for the people."
"And they're buying it?" I asked.
"A lot of Central and South America is. You haven't been watching the news?"
"Off and on. What was the thing with Amnesty International?"
"Oh, the army let one of their lawyers jack into any string he wanted, on condition of confidentiality. He could testify that everyone was genuinely surprised by the atrocity, most people horrified. That's pretty much gotten us off the hook in Europe, or even Africa and Asia. Didn't make the news down south."
Asher and Reza came in together.
"Hey, welcome back, you two. Run off and get married?"
"Ran off," Amelia said quickly. "But to work. We've been up in Washington."
"Government business?" Asher said.
"No, but it will be after the weekend."
"Can we wheedle it out of you, or is it too technical?"
"Not technical, not the most important part." She turned to Marty. Is Ray coming?
No, he had a family thing.
Okay, let's get our drinks. Julian and I have a story to tell. Once the waiter had delivered the wine and coffee and whiskey and disappeared, Amelia started the tale, the threat of absolute intergalactic doom. I added a few details here and there. Nobody interrupted. Then there was a long pause. There had probably not been that many consecutive seconds of silence in all the years this group had been getting together. Asher cleared his throat. Of course, the jury's not in yet. Literally.
That's true, Amelia said. But the fact that Julian and Peter got the same results, down to 8 significant figures, using 2 different starting points and 2 independent methods, well, I'm not worried about the jury, I'm just worried about the politics of shutting down such a huge project, and a little worried about where I'll be working next year, next week.
Ah, Belda said. You've done a good job with the trees. Surely you've thought about the forest as well?
That it's a weapon? I said, and Belda nodded slowly. Yes, it's the ultimate doomsday weapon. It has to be dismantled.
But the forest is bigger than that, Belda said, and sipped her coffee. Suppose you don't just dismantle it, you destroy it without a trace. You go through the literature and erase every line that relates to the Jupiter Project, and then you have government goons go out and kill everyone who's ever heard of it. What happens then?
You tell me, I said. You're going to.
The obvious. In 10 years, or 100, or 1,000,000, somebody else will come up with the idea. And they'll be squashed, too. But then, in another 10 or 1,000,000 years, somebody else will come up with it. Sooner or later, somebody will threaten to use it. Or not even threaten, just do it. Because they hate the world enough, they want everything to die.
There was another long silence. Well, I said, that solves one mystery. People wonder where physical law comes from. I mean, supposedly all the laws governing matter and energy had to be created with the pinprick that began the diaspora. It seems impossible or unnecessary.
So if Belda's right, Amelia said, physical law was all in place 20 billion years ago. Someone pushed the reset button.
And some billions of years before that, Belda said. Someone had done it before. The universe only lasts long enough to evolve creatures like us.
She pointed a V of bony fingers at Amelia and me.
People like you too.
Well, it didn't really solve the first cause mystery. Sooner or later, there had to be an actual first time.
I wonder, Reza said. Surely in all the millions of galaxies there are other races who've made this discovery. Thousands or millions of times, they evidently have all been psychologically incapable of doing it, destroying us all.
Evolve beyond it, Asher said. A pity we haven't.
He swirled the ice in his whiskey.
If Hitler had had the button in his bunker, or Caligula, Genghis Khan.
Hitler only missed the boat by a century, Reza said. I guess we haven't evolved past the possibility of producing another one.
And won't, Belda said. Aggression's a survival characteristic. It put us at the top of the food chain.
Cooperation did, Amelia corrected. Aggression doesn't work against a saber-toothed tiger.
A combination, I'll grant you,
Belda said.
Cooperation and aggression, Marty said. So a soldier boy platoon is the ultimate expression of human superiority over the beasts.
You couldn't tell that by some of them, I said. Some of them seem to have devolved.
But allow me to keep this on track.
Marty steepled his fingers.
Think of it this way. The race against time has begun. Sometime within the next 10 or 1 million years, we have to direct human evolution away from aggressive behavior. In theory, it's not impossible. We've directed the evolution of many other species.
Some in one generation, Amelia said. There's a zoo full of them down the road.
Delightful place, Belda said.
We could do it in one generation, Marty said quietly. Less.
The others all looked at him.
Julian, he said, why don't mechanics stay in soldier boys for more than 9 days?
I shrugged. Fatigue. Stay in too long and you get sloppy.
That's what they tell you. That's what they tell everybody. They think it's the truth.
He looked around uneasily. They were the only people in the room, but he lowered his voice.
This is secret, very secret. If Julian were going back to his platoon, I couldn't say it, because then too many people would know. But I can trust everyone here.
With a military secret? Reza said.
Not even the military knows. Ray and I have kept this from them, and it hasn't been easy. Up in North Dakota, there's a convalescent home with 16 inmates. There's nothing really wrong with them. They stay there because they know they have to.
People you and Ray worked on? I asked.
Exactly. More than 20 years ago. They're middle-aged now and know they'll probably have to spend the rest of their lives in seclusion.
What the hell did you do to them?
Reza said.
8 of them stayed jacked into soldier boys for 3 weeks. The other, 8 for 16 days.
That's all? I said.
That's all.
It drove them crazy? Amelia asked.
Belda laughed, a rare sound, not happy.
I'll bet not. I'll bet it drove them sane.
Belda's close, Marty said. She has this annoying way of being able to read your mind without benefit of electricity. What happens is that after a couple of weeks in the soldier boy, you paradoxically can't be a soldier anymore.
You can't kill, I said.
You can't even hurt anybody on purpose, except to save your own life or other lives. It permanently changes your way of thinking, of feeling, even after you unjack. You've been inside other people too long, shared their identity. Hurting another person would be as painful as hurting yourself.
Not pure pacifists, though. Reza said. Not if they can kill in self-defense.
It varies from individual to individual. Some would rather die than kill, even in self-defense.
Is that what happens to people like Candy? I asked.
Not really. People like her are chosen for empathy, for gentleness. You would expect being jacked to enhance those qualities in them.
You just used random people in the experiment?
Reza asked. He nodded.
The first one was random paid volunteers, off-duty soldiers, but not the second group.
He leaned forward.
Half the second group were special forces assassins. The other half were civilians who had been convicted of murder.
And they all became civilized?
Amelia said.
The verb we use is humanized.
Marty said.